So welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives the real fans a real voice. No fence-sitting, no umming and ahhing, no dithering. We give it to you straight on the FFP.
In the Premier League, I'd put him, this is me being nice, I'd put him in the top five.
Just one of these newfangled kind of, G-up routines that players do now that bores me. It's just like, get all that done in the changing room. Don't try and come out and try and... If you haven't already done all that in the changing room, there's something seriously wrong.
If you're going to consider Vardy for scoring 9 goals, then you got to consider Charlie Austin for scoring 17, right?
My name is Jordan. I'm your host. And just before I announce my panel this week, just a reminder, once again, you can follow us on Twitter, FF_11, and also find us via the Apple iTunes Store Football Fans Podcast. Just click that lovely subscribe button and you can follow and be kept up to date with all the pods each week and all the pods from the previous week as well. Right, so let's get into it now. Introduce my panel. We have our regular Tottenham Hotspur supporter, Ollie. How you doing, my friend?
Very good, Jordan.
Good, good, good. I remember on, I think it was pod two, show number two we did, where it was the Friday night game where United played Villa, the BT game. We discussed what we thought about introduction of Friday night games, which there's been none since, weirdly enough, as well. We're in international break now. It's been 10 days, 2 weeks since there's been any kind of club football. Have you been missing club football? Because you were saying that the fear with Friday night games is, with those games, the Saturday game, Super Sunday, Monday Night Football, Champions League Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and Europa League Thursday, it might be an overload. But we've had none of that in the last 10 days. Are you missing club football?
Only in the sense that because Spurs played reasonably well at Arsenal, I only say reasonably well because they did play well, but they didn't win the game. So I say reasonably well. But only in that sense that because they, you know, because of that performance, I wanted to see them push on from there and go into the next game. So you're always slightly worried about how they're going to play after the international break. And the fact that the likes of Harry Kane's play for England, not just against Spain, but against France as well, means that, you know, you're kind of wondering, well, how's that going to affect him? Or even if he gets injured, or, you know, Dier and Ali are playing as well. So there's that worry, really, of how it's going to affect the kind of, you know, the form going into the Premier League season again. So in that sense, yeah, but in another sense, not so much. I mean, you know, because there've been some good games over the last couple of days. We've seen the playoffs, and that's quite exciting, and it's quite good to see Ireland go through. So no, I haven't missed it as much as I would do if it was, you know, like sometimes you get with those European or World Cup qualifiers when it's the start of the process and there's some just really boring dead games. But we haven't seen dead games. We've seen some good games over the last couple of days. Ireland was good. And I don't know if you saw the Sweden-Denmark game, but that was quite good as well. So there have been a couple of good games and they mean something. So it hasn't been so bad this break.
Okay. And we have our Arsenal supporter for his second appearance on the pod. Mike, how you doing, my friend?
I'm good, George, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm all good, sir. All good. Are Watford an example that stability and continuity is not all it's cracked up to be?
Watford would be a bad example. They are doing well in the league, but I feel it's only a matter of time before they falter and go back down, in my opinion, of course.
You think they'll be one of the three to go this season?
I do believe, but they do have a good striker in Agalu and Deeney. Mm. But I do believe they'll go down, personally.
So you think their model of sacking, I think it was 5 managers in like 3 years on stupid.
Yeah.
That and bringing in 13 players this summer. That's not a model to follow.
I mean, I'm all for a chairman, you know, knowing what he wants, and if you don't feel you're getting that with a manager, you know, move on to the next. But I do believe mainly in sticking with a manager, sticking with his philosophy, and let's see where it gets us. But hopefully they do well, but I do believe they'll go down.
Interesting. All right. And making his debut on the pod this week, we have our Manchester United supporter, Josh. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, man. Good. Glad you're here this week. Not going to discuss United this week because I promised myself that we wouldn't discuss United, Arsenal, Czech, Klopp, Liverpool, Villa, Sherwood, none of that this week.
Okay.
But I'm sure at some point in the near future, we're going to come back to United. I know you've got some views on your team and their season so far. But let's talk Ballon d'Or. Who's the leading contender for you out of Neymar, Suarez, Messi and Muller?
Messi.
Why, sir?
It's not even questionable, is it?
I, I think he is, but tell me why you think it's not.
I think he's, last season he was Barcelona's best player. I think he came back to being probably in the best form I've ever seen him play. And he's just, by hands down, the best player in the world. So I don't see any reason why he shouldn't win it. They won, his club won the treble and he was the best player.
Do you think his 12/18 months were a better 12/18 months than Muller's?
Tough question, because Thomas Muller has been consistently one of the best players I've seen play over the past 18 months. However, Messi, some of Messi's performances last season were incredible. Like, Thomas Muller is technically one of the best footballers you're ever going to see, but he just doesn't have that Messi quality. Do you know what I mean? That extra bit. So I'll still give it to Messi.
And do you think, is Neymar running Messi close? Or do you think that Neymar's behind Muller? He's playing well at the moment, is he, Neymar? But is it just the last?
That's a tough, I think that's a toughie. Neymar and Muller, that's a tough one. I couldn't call it. I think Neymar, especially when Messi's been out with injury, I think Neymar's really stepped up. He's probably been one of Barcelona's better players, even with Suarez as well. But I just think that Thomas Muller consistently over a number of years has displayed a high level of quality. So I think I would go with Muller second.
So he'd be that all three would be ahead of Ronaldo, and he wouldn't be top three.
Ronaldo has not been very good. Like, he still scores ahead of a lot of goals, but he hasn't really been playing very well. I've watched him this season; he's not been playing very well at all.
He's not about it, no. So, all right, cool. Let's move on to our first topic now. Then I want to talk about Joe Hart, and I want to ask Mike first of all: is he all that? We're going to open it up to goalkeepers generally, but I want to start with Joe Hart because. Joe Hart's a player, a goalkeeper that I know divides a lot of opinion amongst people. Now, Mike, are you still, are you still playing as goalkeeper?
I am still a goalkeeper.
You're a goalkeeper? Okay, so we're going to bow to your knowledge on this position here now. What are your, is Joe Hart all that? Is he world class, first of all?
No, he's probably a couple of levels down. Reason being, he's not a keeper you rely on. He's not renowned. For being a keeper that you rely on, that will perform consistently throughout a season. Although I think he's good, I won't take that away from him. I don't believe he has the consistency to go through a whole season and get you those 15 to 20 points that they always talk about as a keeper, i.e. Czech, Courtois or David De Gea.
So where would you rank Joe Hart in the list of Premier League keepers and then world keepers?
In the Premier League, I'd put him, this is me being nice, I'd put him in the top five. Just
name the four above him.
I said I'd put him in the top five. I didn't. You just made my job harder. Geez. Okay. It's with Courtois and De Gea, I'd kind of put them on the same level. But I do believe De Gea has edged him a bit. Maybe that might be due to his recent injury. But I do believe De Gea has edged him a bit. Then I'd go Courtois. Then I'd go Czech. Then I'd put Hart next, but I do believe Fraser Forster, when he was fit, was better than him.
Okay, yes, I know that you're also a fan of Hugo Lloris. You would have Joe Hart before Lloris, though?
I think they're on the same level.
Same level?
Yeah.
Okay, so Lloris wouldn't be guaranteed in your top five in the Premier League?
Both of them, same level.
They'd battle it out.
One of them would have to... I mean, recently, Joe Hart has really impressed me. Mm. I do believe he's playing at a better level than Lloris right now. Mm. He has really impressed me. And Lloris, I mean, the Arsenal game, it's hard for me to defend him. He's doing things like that. He should have saved that. I don't know what, he was lying down. Mm. He was on his way down to the ground, on his line, when the ball's being crossed to the other side. Mm. You can't defend that. He should have saved that.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? And this is why I feel, but then again, I look at Joe Hart, what he done against Norwich, and it's like, what are you playing at?
Equally as worse, yeah.
Same thing against Spain, Joe Hart. Kick the ball out to their striker and it's just comp. They're as bad as each other and they're as good as each other.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to kind of put one into the top five.
Okay. Ollie, what do you think about Joe Hart? Would you put him in the world elite of top 10 world class goalkeepers?
No, I wouldn't. I think he hasn't got much in the way of experience competition. I know Jack Butland's coming up, but I still think that Hart is way above him. But yeah, he hasn't really got that much competition in his country. And it's a shame, really, because when you think back to the good old days when England had quite a few keepers to call on, them days are long gone now, aren't they? And they don't seem to be able to produce the level of top class keepers that they used to. And I definitely think that, you know, that he, as Mike was saying, I think he's got a few ricks in him. That one against Norwich the other week was a bad one and really could have cost City serious points because Arsenal had won. I think you were playing Swansea that day, weren't you?
Yeah.
And yeah, he nearly cost City 2 points and that could have meant Arsenal going top of the league, which for me as a Spurs fan would have been awful. I thought that was, and it was just totally kind of, you know, he wasn't even under any pressure, was he? I can't understand how he made that error. So he's got mistakes in him. And
do you think that's what ultimately will keep him out of that world elite bracket, that he has got a stupid mistake in him?
It's not just the mistakes. I just think that great keepers have presence, don't they? And he just doesn't have that presence. He's a decent keeper, but he doesn't have that presence of like a Manuel Neuer or a Schmeichel, as we saw in the old days. You know, those keepers where they save you, you know, they save you games. It is important to have a top keeper because those kind of keepers save you games. They win you titles, you know. They kind of, when the pressure's on, I remember one game years ago when Arsenal came to Spurs and we basically bossed the game. It was another one of those games where we went ahead first and Christian Ziga scored a free kick from 30 yards or whatever, and then Arsenal got an equaliser. But then after that, Seaman kept Arsenal in the game. And it was, you know, and essentially that was, you know, they essentially said after the game, George Graham said, well, that's what I pay him for, you know. And that's kind of what you expect. You know, he pulled out a performance to get Arsenal the point. And that's what top keepers do. And sometimes with Hart, I'm not convinced. I'm just not convinced that he's got it. He's got that about him that he can be the difference between you winning or losing a game or even getting a draw, you know.
Josh, I think it's probably accepted at the moment. Your goalkeeper, De Gea, probably is the best keeper in the league right now. Top two in the world as well. Is there a huge gap between David De Gea and Joe Hart?
Yes.
How big's the gap?
Very big.
What are Hart's strengths and weaknesses?
Okay, all right. Right, let me just give Joe Hart a little bit of praise because he's getting a bit of a bashing. Right, I've seen him have some very, very good performances. I think in the Champions League, I think he's really good against Barcelona. I think one game is really good against Bayern Munich. I think won the Dortmund game. I think the first time City were in the Champions League and he had an amazing game against Dortmund. But in the next game, he'll concede a goal. It's a very stupid goal. And what you want from a goalkeeper is consistency. Like, so if you want to compare someone like David De Gea and Joe Hart, I'd say if you go back and think about when De Gea first came to the Premier League and he was not handling crosses well and the press was just bashing him left, right and centre. And then the next week, flappy Joe Hart will flap a cross in and someone will header it in the back of the net and no one say anything. And I think they both had that kind of element to their game. De Gea corrected it. De Gea is also far better shot stopper. He makes unbelievable saves that you just don't think any goalkeeper will make. And Joe Hart is a very good goalkeeper, but he's just not elite.
Okay, yeah. And Ollie, I remember you saying, again, one of the early pods, we were talking about Cech, I think it was, and we were saying the importance that Cech would have to Arsenal, and I think De Gea to United. And you made the point that, well, no, actually, we're talking about the contracts and how they should break the bank to keep him at United. And you disagreed and you said that you thought he's a goalkeeper. He's not. You know, they're not that important. How important are goalkeepers to clubs?
They are important, but I don't think they're that important.
Be careful what you say here.
They are important, but I just don't think they're as important as United were making De Gea to be. You know, I think that the whole De Gea thing I thought was badly handled. And in the end, Real Madrid stuffed themselves by not getting the deal done when it looked like it was all signed and sealed. But I just didn't think that the whole business with De Gea, putting yourself out on the limb to keep him at any cost, made any sense, bearing in mind that, you know, you're going to lose him for nothing at the end of the season. I just thought United should take the money and move on. But, you know, they're important. There's no doubt they're important. I mean, as Mike said a minute ago, the Lloris one mistake against Arsenal, I mean, that's cost us the 3 points, really, I think. I thought it was poor, but not just that, because he just didn't command his area either in that game. You know, there were a couple of those corners. I know a lot of the time on the commentary, there was, you know, Gary Neville was saying, oh, well, Spurs can't handle Giroud. But I actually thought sometimes the problem was that Lloris wasn't commanding his area. Is, you know, he should have come out a few times and just said, well, you know, I'm going to punch this out. Giroud ain't going to get anywhere near it. But he just sort of, he was rooted to his line. And I just think that is, that's important. You need a keeper who can command his area. De Gea was amazing for Man United last year, don't get me wrong. But I certainly think that every keeper has his price. And I don't think that you should do everything you can to keep him if the guy desperately wants to leave.
Mike, as a goalkeeper, would you say that a good goalkeeper is the second or the most important part of the team after the centre forward? Are they that important?
I believe so. I mean, you look at any building, any infrastructure, the main thing is the foundation. Once you have a solid foundation, you've got something to build on. Personally, last season, Man United's standout performer was their goalkeeper. And that's massive, you know, coming from, they had players like Rooney, they had, who else did you have?
Van Persie, Falcao, Juan Mata, Valera.
You know, and he stood out head and shoulders above the rest. I would say he personally took them to fourth, even though he's a goalkeeper. You know, he kept them in so many games. I remember the Arsenal game, the Chelsea game, where you drew 1-1 with Drogba. Drogba scored, didn't he? He was fantastic in that game. You know what I mean? He kept them in so many games, games they should have lost because of De Gea they were drawing or they were winning. So for me, you break the bank for a top goalkeeper.
Would you have broken the bank for David De Gea?
Yeah, definitely.
It ended up like Ollie said, that Madrid stuffed themselves.
Whether I was Madrid or whether I was United, I would have broke the bank to keep him at United, or I would have broke the bank to get him at Real Madrid personally.
Define break the bank. How far would you have gone?
For De Gea? I would have gone about 40.
So if you're Madrid, you would have given off 40 million. 40. Bearing in mind it's the last year of his contract.
This is last year, so I would have gone probably about just below 30.
So what, if you're United, you'd keep him for that last season and get nothing for him at the end of the season?
If it meant me winning the league, I would.
But they're not going to win the league with him or without him, though.
Personally, you never know.
You never know. They'll win the league?
You're asking the wrong person. You're asking the wrong person.
Just that to, you know, the United supporter.
Go on, Mike.
I think he's a keeper that can win you a league.
So would you break the bank to keep him? I know he's on the contract, but the knowledge is that he's just doing that to make sure that next summer you guys get a fee for him. would you break the bank to keep him? Is he after a striker? Do you agree with Mike that he's the second most important player?
No, I'm not agree with that. Okay. But I would break the bank to keep him. Yeah, just like I would break the bank right now to keep Chris Smalling, or I'd break the bank to keep, who else would I break the bank to keep in our team? Not that many players, but De Gea and Chris Smalling, yeah, why not?
What I'm trying to get at is, in the hierarchy of importance and priorities in your team, where does your goalkeeper / De Gea, does he figure in that?
All right, if you're talking goalkeepers in general, it's a different conversation than David De Gea, because with David De Gea, you're talking about potentially the best goalkeeper in the world, right? With Neuer, and maybe, so I think he's better than Courtois, but whatever. So when you're talking about the best, right, then the whole conversation about positions goes out of the window. Just like if you had the best centre back in the world, or the best centre mid of the world, or the best striker in the world, or the best midfield winger in the world, it doesn't matter about position anymore. That guy's the best. You have to break the bank to keep him if you're a club that wants to win trophies. You do not sell you the best player in the world. End of. So I don't have any problems with what United did. At the end of the day, the whole situation was a bit funny. But at the end of the day, we've got David De Gea. He signed a new contract. Whether he leaves at the end of the season or not, I'm not really that fussed.
If you're a manager going to a club, what's the first position that you look to address?
Midfield.
Second?
Defence.
Third?
Forward line.
So the goalkeeper's... of the four areas, is the last area you look to strengthen?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I think if you've got a competent goalkeeper in your team, now that's why I said, when you talk about goalkeepers in general, it's a different conversation from when you talk about the best, right? Because if you've got a competent goalkeeper, if Man United had Joe Hart, Jack Budland, Lloris, Fraser Forster.
Tim
who's
Cool.
Who's the guy at Chelsea now?
Tim Cool.
No. Begovic. Begovic. Good goalkeepers. Begovic isn't world class, but he's a good goalkeeper. I'll take him at United. Mm. If we had world class centre backs, world class centre mids and forwards, because at the end of the day, your defence and the defensive shape of your midfield is going to help your goalkeeper. Your goalkeeper is not going to be called into question, called in to stop shots all the time. If you've got prolific goalkeeper up front and you concede one goal a game, but you score two, that's not really that bad. You win the league.
Mm. Okay, Mike, if you're one of the teams in the lower half of the league, if you're a Bournemouth, if you're a Villa struggling, would you take, if you were offered in a dream world, would you take a world class goalkeeper or a world class centre back? So if you're Bournemouth, for example, and you were offered Company and you were offered David De Gea, who would you take?
I would take personally Company. Okay. Yeah.
Have you seen Bournemouth's keeper?
Borick, they got in it.
You see the goals he's threw in against
he's
Spurs.
He's a nutter. He's a complete nutter.
He threw in five goals against
Spurs.
Yeah,
he's a nutter. He's a complete nutter. I'd take the reason I take Company is, as Josh said, you know, once you've got a solid defence, although it's funny because when you look at Arsenal, where is it? We had the best defence two seasons ago, but Chesney was just letting us down. Do you know what I mean?
So you can get away with a top back.
He's competent.
No, he's not. Have you seen that Roma? He's not competent.
He's a decent keeper.
They're sending him back quite quickly, aren't they?
Yeah, they're looking to send him back to us.
So you'd take a really, really good back four and an average goalkeeper rather than a world-class goalkeeper and an average back four.
Yeah, what I'm about to say, I'm basing it on last season. Look at Chelsea. You put any goalkeeper, you put Mignolet back there, they'll probably win the league because they've got a solid back four.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just finally, Ollie, back on Joe Hart. Do you buy into this whole, when I see Joe Hart, he's big on his kind of pumping his chest and in the tunnels, screaming and shouting and G-ing up his team and all that. Does that annoy you, or do you like your keepers to kind of be really, to come out as warriors and pumping everybody up? Because I don't know if I like it or if it annoys me.
No, it's one of those.
Is it for the cameras?
It's one of these newfangled kind of, G-up routines that players do now, which bores me. It's just like, get all that done in the changing room. Don't try and come out and try. If you haven't already done all that in the changing room, there's something seriously wrong. I don't really like all this sort of players getting in a huddle. It's like, what is that? Why do they do that now? They come out onto the pitch. They never used to do that before. They used to come out now and they do a huddle and say, come on, boys, we're going to win it. It's like, what do you need to... What is it they actually say in the huddle? What do they say in the huddle they can't say back in the dressing room? I don't understand it. And I don't like all that pumping up. I tell you who I really didn't like doing it. And really, the person that really irritated me who did it was Campbell when he went to your lot and he went off. And then he came back to White Hart Lane and it was all this, like, you know, before the game, they were all it was all solidarity with Sol, and they were all kind of high-fiving him and pumping, you know, pressing chest with him and all that. I thought, why are you doing that? Why are you doing that? If you're happy with what you've done, Sol, why do you need to go around every member of the Arsenal team making like, I'm with you, yeah? I'm with you. We're all a team, yeah? I'm part of Arsenal legend now, aren't I? It's like, it's really poor. It's like, I was thinking more Gerrard as well. Listen, mate, you made your decision, yeah? You crossed the road, right? You crossed the road and went to Arsenal. Live with it, right? You don't have to come down at White Lane and just, I'm Arsenal now, yeah? I'm Arsenal. Idiot. I just thought that was just really, really poor. I've got no time for any of it. Joe Hart, Sol Campbell, any of these player huddles, leave it, man. Leave it. Allow it. I'm not interested.
The Gerrard one was the one that got me.
When he was last season, the title photo, he was pathetic.
Like, come on. Come on. We don't let it slip from here. Except me.
Alright, you know what? One thing I'll say about that with Joe Hart and the Steven Gerrard is also a good example, yeah? First and foremost, perform on the pitch. If you're going to start doing... Because I've seen Joe Hart when he's trying to save penalties and he's doing all of this stupid foolishness that he does. Yeah? First and foremost, if you're going to act like that, do not drop a clanger and Norris scores.
Yeah, you're stupid.
Because you look like an idiot.
All right, let's move on now to I want to talk a little bit about now call-ups for national squads. We'll probably focus now on England because it's the best nation, what I know best, so the best examples I've got here. Start with you, Josh. Should being called up to the, to your national team be solely based on your current form? Should that be the only thing that matters? If you're playing well over an 8 to 10 game period stretch, you should be considered at least, if not called up, for your squad?
No.
Why not?
Because I think that certain players have what they call pedigree. For instance, I'm not going to talk about Wayne Rooney because his form has been poor for a little while. But if you talk about someone like, if Robert Lewandowski went through a spell of 8 games without scoring a goal, you're not going to drop him from the Poland squad, are you? Because he's still the best striker in of the Polish nation. Doesn't matter if some guy scored, like Jamie Vardy has scored, 12 goals this season?
9 in the league, so yeah.
9 in the league.
Possibly 12 in total, yeah.
Last season, he went a long time without scoring a goal. So if you now say, all right, this guy is having a bit of a purple patch now, I'm going to put him in a squad. We get to Euro 2016, and then he's not scoring. That towards the end of the season, let's say, for instance, he goes 10 games without scoring a goal, what, then you drop him? It doesn't make sense. I think you need players who are consistently performing at a higher level. If you're going to move them into a national squad.
So you're basically saying there that reputation and pedigree should count for something over someone that's on fire over 10 games.
10 games are too small a subset if you're talking about bringing someone into a national team, in my opinion.
Mm.
I think that you need to look at players who've consistently performed at a higher level.
Well, Vardy's a good example because if the Euro started tomorrow, he would expect to be heavily considered, if not picked. But you're saying that with the strikers that are around, he wouldn't be in your team because he's going through a purple patch. And is that fair?
Who've England got?
Kane,
Berahino, Rooney, Sturridge, Charlie Austin. Okay, Charlie Austin scored, what, how many Premier League goals last season?
18?
He's not going anyway.
I'm not saying he's going, but I'm saying 15, if you're gonna consider Vardy for scoring 9 goals, then you got to consider Charlie Austin for scoring 17, right?
Mm.
Or I think Danny Ings got a number of goals for Burnley last season, and then you've got Harry Kane. I'm not saying Vardy's a poor player. He's obviously in great reign of form at the moment, but he hasn't shown consistency because last season he wasn't doing anything. Mm. So for me, I wouldn't really have him in the England squad.
Okay, so Ollie, if Vardy bangs 19 goals this season, do you think it'll be, bearing in mind what Josh is saying there, last year, you're basing it on one season, would you think it was unfair for him to not be, like I said, at least considered, if not, you know, selected for the squad?
He has to be considered, yeah. I mean, you want to take someone who's hot, don't you? Especially with strikers. Someone's hot and he's got pace as well. He might be a good person to come on late in a game when you need a goal, you know, play the old England way, hit the ball over the top. Vardy goes and gets on the end of something and scores. So he'd be a good weapon to have in your armoury, I think. So yeah, I would say he deserves to go. It's not a problem with that.
So let me add this now then. If Sturridge is fit tomorrow, scores 9 goals between now and May, Harry Kane scores 11 goals between now and May, Theo Walcott scores 10 goals between now and May, Vardy bangs 19. They're all fit. We're taking 4 strikers, I'm assuming, to do the Euros. Does Vardy get in?
Well, you've always got to wonder with Sturridge how fit is fit, you know, and when you think that
he's 100% fit,
you know. Yeah, but Sturridge is never 100%.
No, he's not. But in my world, this is my utopia world. Come on, kind of, play my game.
If it was all, but we're talking.
But
about,
the point I'm getting to is that if he's on fire this season, Jamie Vardy scores 19 goals. Sturridge scores 9 goals this season.
Yeah.
Is it? What's the point of playing well for your club if you're not going to be considered? Because the guy that's been playing well for the last 2 years, but this year is not in form, gets put ahead of you.
Yeah. I still think that I think he likes Sturridge. Hodgson likes Sturridge, and I think he'll take him. To be honest with you, I don't think he. I know in your world, Sturridge is fit, but I think it will play in his mind. You know, can I trust this guy to play 2 games in a week? You know, he's not. He just doesn't stay fit, and I don't think you can take that out of the equation, Jordan. I think that Hodgson, in Hodgson's thinking, he will be thinking, I need guys who are going to play, and they're going to be able to play game in, game out. Now, whether England get through the group is another thing entirely. They might only have to play three games, and maybe they'll be back home depending on the group they get. But still, I think it will play a big part in it that Vardy will probably be fit, and Sturridge is someone you can't rely on. So, yeah, even this season, you look at Sturridge, Jordan, and he's kind of in and out. There'd be an argument to say the worst thing he could do now is go and play in the summer. The worst thing, the best thing he could do
from
is
from a Liverpool point of view.
From a Liverpool point of view, for his own career, the best thing he could do now, after the season finishes, have time off and make sure he's ready come pre-season, that he can have a really good pre-season. Because they always say, don't they, if you have a good pre-season, it sets you up for the rest of the campaign. And if you're in a situation where he's going off for the summer and then he's coming back and only having a short pre-season and then he's going into the new season, you know he's breaking down again. Yeah. So I think that you've got to look at it and think that Sturridge is someone who, unless there's a really cast iron case for him going, you've got to think that Vardy is the man he's going to take.
Mike, I've got some names here, because when Hodgson got the job, I remember when his first press conference, he said, he was asked the question, will he be picking players based on form? And he said he would, but his actions in the first few games didn't appear to back that up. So players like Welbeck, Townsend, Cleverley, Walcott, Wilshere, Walker, and Johnson will break. He's got his hands on his head. He's got his hands on his head. They were regularly picked, and they stick with me, Mike. They were regularly getting picked because, but there was long periods where those players were not on form. Even playing for their team, Townsend and Welbeck weren't playing for their teams, and he was still picking them. But they were his generals. They were performing for him. So his logic at the time was, I don't care if you're on form or even playing for your club. If you play well for me, I will pick you. Is that the right thing to do?
He said the W word. The thing with me is, first things first, first thing you got to do is look at how you want to play before you can try and incorporate certain players into your team. Because if I'm trying to play with a target man and I'm calling Vardy into my squad, it's not going to work. Unless I play him on the wing, and there I'm not getting the best out of him. Vardy likes to play up front. He's a fast forward. He likes to play with through balls behind, or trying to get in behind the defence. And if I'm trying to play with a target man, it's not going to work. So the first thing I would do is look at how I want to play. And then I would look at the kind of players I want to put into that formation. You mentioned people, Welbeck. Oh gosh.
So put your kind of personal kind of beef with Welbeck to one side. The point I'm making is that he wasn't playing for his team.
Welbeck plays well for England. Yeah. You know, when Welbeck plays for England, he scores. He has a phenomenal record with England. So I understand why he players you rely on. Do you know what I mean? He's called him up and he performs well for him. I understand that. You know, feel free, call him up. But when you're ignoring people that were in form, i.e. Berahino, who had a good season last season, ignored him. Apparently, he had an attitude problem or so on and so forth. When you ignore people like that, it's like, how do you measure it? Is it the FA? Is it Hodgson? Is it over his head? Does he have to pick people like Rooney? Rooney should be dropped right now.
Well, Rooney's a bit of a standout example.
Rooney should be dropped.
Do we think that Rooney... You mentioned Josh earlier on about his pedigree and what he's done. He's an all-time goal scorer for England.
Don't back out now, Josh.
Based on his reputation and what he's done for England, I don't know what that is, but should he be a banker? Because he's been there and done it with England.
Based on his reputation and what he's done for England, he has not turned up in a tournament since I don't know even when.
You were 2004.
I don't even know where that even comes
in. You were a manager, you would look at his case, his form this season. If he's not stepping up,
I would look at his form over, remember what I said? I said he has to be performing consistently well over an extended period. So Jamie Vardy performing well for 10 games isn't long enough, but maybe Jamie Vardy performing well for 38 games is good enough. Like, there's a difference there, right? But Rooney hasn't been performing well for a little while. Like, I don't remember the last time the guy scored 20 Premier League goals. So if you're saying that you want to take a striker to a tournament and you want to win a tournament, I'm not sure Rooney's the guy. Rooney's the guy because he's the England captain. He's got to go because he's the England captain and he's the biggest name in England at the moment. He's the face of the national team and of United and all of this kind of, and of the Premier League, right? But at the end of the day, in terms of his performances, he doesn't really deserve to be called up to the England team. That's if you're just looking at his performances.
Okay, all right.
See, if you don't mind, I'll just add. You look at other countries. You need to be able to have the pedigree to come into the squad and cut names. Klinsmann went into Germany and he cut so many of the oldies, cut them out and brought through all the youngsters. Ozil, Muller, Lahm, he brought them all through. I said, I'm going to stick with these guys. You know, I'm going to go through some bad patches, but we're going to stick with these lot. And we're going to push forward. And you look at them now, they won the World Cup. England, they've been calling up people like Gerrard, playing him on the left wing, Lampard, and they're not performing well. Someone needs to come through and cut all those guys and say, we're going to go with the youngsters and these are who I'm going to stick with.
Well, I think what Mike's point earlier was is really important as well, that you need a manager to come in and have a really set idea about what is the system he wants to play. And so that's what makes it so hard to answer your question, because I'm not convinced that Hodgson has made it clear what system he wants to play. You know, because one minute he's playing Rooney, next minute he's playing with Kane, and then there's talk about Vardy, and you just think, well, what's the system here? And then, you know, one minute it's 4-2-3-1, and then he's talking about he wants to go to the Euros and play 4-3-3, and you're just like, well, I don't understand what he's trying to achieve here. I don't really get it at the moment. I think until he gets it clear in his mind, and he's had quite a lot of time now, hasn't he? He's had this will be, what, his third tournament now? Going into his third tournament?
He came in on
Euro 2012, yeah. Right? So, yeah, you know, he's had a bit of time to work it out, and I don't think we're any further forward in terms of knowing. I mean, these two games that he's just had, you think, well, surely against Spain, don't you want to play your best team? Don't you want to say, right, you know, we've had a really easy qualification process. Now we're going into the nitty-gritty. We want to play against, you know, the European champions. Let's see what we can do with our best team. And yet he's playing all these kind of... He's experimenting. I don't really get it. I just think, well, why are you experimenting against them? He could have experimented against some of them teams in the qualifiers, because some of those teams in the qualifiers were useless. So I don't really understand why he's experimenting now against Spain. And
qualified with three games to go. So even the last three games...
I mean, seriously, what's more important that you give some of these young kids that you want to give a chance to, is it more important to give them a chance in a competitive game, albeit against a lesser European nation, or is it more important for him to start experimenting now? He's now got to settle on who is his team, what's his formation, and how are they going to play? And like Mike says, until you work that out, then you can only see this whole thing in France going the way it normally does. Just not being very clear about what he's trying to achieve and ultimately ending up in failure.
And just finally, Josh, on this, I hear a lot of kind of football fans kind of bringing up names that they feel, names of players at teams that they support who haven't been given a look in at the England squad. And I think when you said a purple patch of a really good sustained period of playing really, really well and just get overlooked. People like Redmond, Cresswell, Puncheon, Scott Dan, Jenkinson, Noble even. Do you think that if some of those guys played well for a season, they would ever get a look in? Or do you think that Roy Hodgson's got in his mind that they're either not good enough or don't fit into if he knows what his model is?
It's a funny one with Roy Hodgson, because he's called out some players that I thought, where's he got that one from? Like, Cresswell has been, he's one of the best left-backs in the league last season, wasn't he? And he's played really well this season. I'm quite shocked that he hasn't been called out. But then again, you did have Luke Shaw ahead of him. He did have Ryan Bertrand played really well last season as well. So there's a lot of competition for left-back, so maybe that's a bit harsh. But I do think that I used to think that certain players at certain clubs didn't get a look in. But I think that's a little bit changed under Hodgson, because he's called Vardy up. And I think he's...
Delph up at Villa.
I think he is a bit more open than how it used to be. So I wouldn't criticise him for that one.
All right, let's move on to our final topic. I've been trying to talk about Bournemouth for a few weeks now. But with Mourinho and Klopp and Sherwood and Arsenal, it just kind of gets a little bit sidelined a little bit. So I want to get them in now. Let's ask you, Ollie. Do you feel Bournemouth are struggling? They got a million injuries. With the TV money that's coming in to the Premier League next season, do you feel they should go for broke and just blow the bank in January to try and stay in the Premier League by any means necessary? Or should they just accept that, look, we're going down, let's not put our club at financial risk, take this one on the chin, go down, rebuild and come again in 2 years?
When you say, should they blow the bank?
I'm talking spend 30 mil on 4 or 5 players.
Right, but you take on board that most, you know, they're not going to get top players playing for Bournemouth, are they?
No, but the current squad is definitely going down. But if they brought in 4 or 5 okay-ish players, they give us a chance.
Yeah, but as you know, I mean, you know, they could do that and still go down. But it's more about the spirit, I suppose. But I think they should have a good go at it, because I actually think that if they got the team spirit together, we saw what Leicester did last season. It can happen. And I think there are so many bad teams down there that any team that comes up with a run and engenders a bit of team spirit and gets on a roll, they've got every chance of staying up. I actually think that there are plenty of teams down there who are going to struggle. I think Gard will probably get Villa out of trouble now. He looks like he knows what he's about, and he's had these couple of weeks to get everything in place ready for this restart of the Premier League. So probably Gard will get them out of trouble. But I dare say that Sunderland, the likes of Sunderland and Newcastle, are going to be bobbing about down there for the whole season. And then there's the other teams who came up last season as well. Although I disagree with Mike. I think Watford might well stay up, to be honest with you. But I think there's enough teams down there for Bournemouth not to get cut adrift. So if they were to go in the transfer market in January and have a go, there's every chance. I think they've got to have a go, really, because, you know, what's the point of getting to the Premier League just to think, well, we'll just go down again and just take the parachute money? I think they've got to have a go, and I think they've got every chance of staying up if they do.
Well, bearing in mind they're probably the favourites to go down and the squad isn't great, if you're to get any decent players there, they're going to have to spend over the odds, so therefore risking the stability of that club. Is it worth doing that in the event that you might finish fourth bottom and stay and you get the big TV money? Let's just keep it as it is.
If you do it smart, if they're smart about it and they don't go and buy players who are well out of their range, but if they go and nicked a few players that they'd seen playing well in the Championship or something, and so, you know, or players who they can afford, that if they go down, those players will still stay at the club and they won't cost them an arm and a leg, then there's no reason for them not to do that. And we've seen plenty of times before. You know, what's to say that they couldn't? I don't know. Maybe he might think that he's above that. But what's to say that they shouldn't go and buy a Charlie Austin? You know, we know that he can score goals in the Premier League. I know they've got Callum Wilson to come back, but Callum Wilson's a way off. And the thing is about survival, isn't it? What's to say that? I mean, Austin's doing nothing at QPR. He's clearly looking at it and thinking, well, you know, they're probably still looking.
He's waiting to be bought, isn't he?
He's looking to be bought. And, you know, it's surprising he didn't get bought. But what's to stop them going out and getting Charlie Austin, who we all know can score in the Premier League, who could get them out of trouble in the second half of the season? That's what I mean. Those sort of players from the Championship who could come to Bournemouth, wouldn't break the bank, but could help them